Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Geek Roulette Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Mike Spriggle.
And I am the other host, John Lundquist.
Thank you very much. The traffic today is right now 15 minutes behind on 94. You'll see the rain and it's causing a lot of backups and the accidents.
And we're going to talk like this the entire podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, the stop buttons are hitting nonstop
almost,
right now.
You can almost hear it now. Yes. Hello, everybody.
Hello, and thank you for listening. This episode, we are going to do a retrospective of the first 15 years of The Simpsons. Why the first 15 years?
Because we haven't watched it since then, probably.
Because the second 15 years, perhaps, you don't need to watch as much.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, we'll get into that.
First and foremost, let's get through the housekeeping. We follow us on Facebook at Geek Roulette or on Twitter at Geek Roulette. Rate and review us on any platform that you listen, and you know the drill.
Yes. Yeah. Go find us, review us, and stuff.
Yep. Recommendations. I got to tell you, nothing else has come out recently that's really inspired me. You could
three-peat the House of X and Powers of X recommendation.
I could keep talking about Hickman, but then I'm just beating a dead horse. I could talk about Marvel Unlimited.
It's too late now.
Yeah, I wasn't making any sweet money on that in the first place.
Yeah, you know.
I don't know. I guess if there was anything that I could probably recommend, I mean, it's really been a dry spell on television.
Go out and enjoy life, people. Have a life experience. That is your recommendation for Mike, is go have a life experience. Do something bold, damn it.
No.
Okay, be timid and stay in your house.
Right.
It's safe in the basement.
Right. Build a fallout shelter. Make sure canned goods and bottled water, everything that you get. Yes. I don't know. If I had to make a recommendation, it's a preemptive one. It's
cold SpaghettiOs.
No. That's what... That's what Rorschach would do from The Watchmen. He'd just be sitting there, split head on the dog in the street, blood everywhere.
Mean juice.
Yeah. SpaghettiOs, cold.
Yeah.
Apparently my Rorschach sounds like a horrible version of Sling Blade.
There's a nice crossover.
Here's the recommendation. I do better and learn how to do better impersonations. I recommend I do that.
Yes.
What about you? Do you have anything to recommend?
I actually have a recommendation for once, because usually I'm the one struggling to come up with them. I'm going to recommend a podcast that I started listening to a couple weeks ago. I haven't gotten too far into it, although there's three or four seasons of it out there. And that is Mission to Zix, ZYXX. It's an improvised comedy podcast by some members of the Upright Citizens Brigade, I think, which is kind of a notorious improvised comedy troupe. I think they're out in New York, I want to say. A lot of comedians you would probably recognize have done some time with them. But it's kind of a science fiction comedy type thing. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. It's if you're into science fiction like Star Wars, Star Trek, it's got a lot of those things. The basic, elevator pitch of it is that the Rebellion won. They took down this huge, horrible, evil empire type thing, and now they're out kind of trying to make friends with everybody in the universe and assure them that things are going to go well. There's the main character. Well, he's kind of not really the main character, but the main, the Luke Skywalker, if you will. I forget his name, but there's a Luke Skywalker kind of character who's your human guy. There's an alien kind of female muscle of the group. There's a robot who's kind of your C-3PO character. The ship has a personality, and then they have kind of their liaison with the main government body. I forget the character's name because it's been a couple weeks since I've been able to listen to an episode, but it's pretty darn funny. If you'd told me, well, obviously I was told it was improvised, but you can't really tell it's improvised. It's got, they must have like plot points that they have to hit for each one, but how they get there and what they do must be up to the individual actors and whatnot. And it's got some pretty good moments. Good stuff. If you're looking for another podcast to check out, if you have a long drive to work, you have a lot of time around the house, Mission to Zix. I'm like 5 episodes in, I think, but like I said, there's like 3 or 4 seasons out there that are roughly 15 to 20 episodes each, I think. So there's a lot of stuff there. It's been funny so far. I've been enjoying it. Check it out.
For our arbitrary list, summer's winding down. Labor Day just happened. It's technically summer goes for another couple of weeks and everything, but to celebrate the ode to summer, I wanted the list to be the top 3 summer movies that we each enjoy. And now, By summer movies, I don't mean blockbusters where, like, you know, all right, gotta watch Independence Day. I don't like to consider a summer movie where if it's like a hot summer night at 10 o'clock at night and you're sitting there drinking a beer, it's a movie you're going to sit there and watch to the end. And it's something that, you know, it will always entice you no matter what. So the criteria is different here. You may have your own and you want to criticize the ones we pick. That's perfectly fine. I ain't going to crap on that.
Yeah. Lay off, man.
So top three movies, you or me first?
I'll go first. My first one, and I kind of, yeah, took it the same way. Like, just movies that pretty much anytime you're channel surfing, not that that's something anybody does, and you come across this on TNT or USA, you're going to stop and watch it at least for a little bit. My first one I've got on there is Tron Legacy. It's a movie I think didn't get as much credit as it should have when it came out a few years back. Kind of got panned. They were, you know, I think there was talk of doing a third one for a while, but it, you know, ultimately I think they Disney just decided that this one didn't do quite as well. I think it's kind of, it's a fun movie. Yeah, it has its problems, but I think the action scenes are really cool. It's got probably one of the better soundtracks you're going to come across in recent years, with Daft Punk doing the soundtrack on that one. That's one I still play every once in a while. But just it's good stuff. It's fun. You can kind of shut your brain off and watch it and enjoy the special effects, enjoy the action and the awesome visuals. And yeah, it's fun stuff. I like it.
I think the reason that movie gets panned so much is that it came out, I think, at the wrong time. Had it came out maybe a few years later, maybe it might have been better received. And I think everybody's like, well, you know, there's a lot of action and it just feels silly. Really, the first Tron movie was not an intellectual juggernaut of a movie to begin with. I mean, essentially, it's like, hey, watch, you know, Bridges play video games by throwing frisbees at people. And
yeah, I think that's one that would be interesting. We'll have to maybe go do that where we watch the original Tron, because that's one I think that people get kind of rose-colored glass with, and it's not quite as good, I think, as a lot of people remember.
It's good. It dates, I think, a bit more than you, like, I think it would, but I do agree Tron Legacy, I feel, is a very underrated movie. So the one I picked for my one of my choices, I picked the movie The Cabin in the Woods, and that is the Drew Goddard movie about where basically it takes all the horror movie tropes and kind of turns it on its head, essentially about, you know, a bunch of you know, teenagers or college students being, you know, guided to a cabin in the forest unknowns to them, and they're actually being offered as a sacrifice, that if the sacrifice doesn't happen by a certain time, the world ends. And each country, you know, does it. As long as one of the countries succeeds with the sacrifice, then the whole world continues to go on. But it turns out...
spoiled it.
All right.
Damn, fine. You. It's a 15-20-year-old movie. How dare you?
Did I really spoil it, though? Because, I mean, the first opening scenes of the movie are... you know, you have two guys that work basically in the control center for this.
Oh, that could be. I haven't actually seen it. I just know that that's the big
thing. Wait, you've never seen it?
I have not.
Holy shit.
I've never been a huge horror guy, and like my wife now is far, far from a horror person, and I've never really cared enough about horror movies to seek them out on my own, so thus I haven't seen a whole lot of them.
I would say watch it. Don't. It's not as much as a horror movie as you think. It's actually one of those movies that is funnier than it really should be because of its self-awareness about... I don't want to use the term meta because I think that comes up too much, but it's also one of those things where what happens when, like, you know, you take a horror movie and you actually have it happen, have to happen for a specific reason almost. And
yeah.
But yeah, that's my choice, and shame on you.
Yeah, I'm like that. My next one is... movie by Guy Ritchie, and that is Snatch, his second movie after Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. That is
correct. I would say that's his last movie. I guess Sherlock Holmes. He kind of came back, and but
he's done. Yeah, he's done.
Madonna ruined him.
Didn't? Yeah. Did he do one more? Kind of in that gritty crime.
Wasn't it Rock and Roller?
That could be. I thought there was one more, but I didn't see it. But anyway, Snatch, you know, it's got Brad Pitt. It's got Jason Statham before he was like a huge thing that he is now. It's got who else? And a whole bunch of people that you're going to recognize. A lot of great character actors. They all do an amazing job. It's got a lot of, it's very quotable. It's, you know, just kind of a fun ride. It's one that you can kind of watch at any moment. And, you know, it's just kind of a fun romp through the, you know, I don't know, seedy underbelly of London's, you know, I don't know if I'd say organized crime, but definitely their, you know, a section of their organized crime world, and it's just fun to watch. You know, it's got Antonio Banderas in there, who is actually not in it a whole lot, but does great work. the whole cast, I mean, it's hard to complain about, and it's one that you can always watch it and check it out and have a good time with. If you have not seen Snatch, I highly recommend it. It's good stuff.
My second movie choice I had, I feel that if you want hot summer movies, what encompasses summer more than Pulp Fiction? I feel it's one of those movies that was always, it's always the movie that put Tarantino, I think, squarely on the map. Obviously, people knew about him from Reservoir Dogs or True Romance, but really, that was the movie there. I feel that there's so many scenes from that movie that always get quoted beyond belief. It's just an easy movie just to put on and watch. And even if you know the dialogue line for line, you still want to hear the dialogue line for line. So Pulp Fiction is my number two choice.
Pulp Fiction is good stuff indeed. My last one, I don't know, it was kind of a toss-up because I was having a brain fart with it. But one that I've always really enjoyed, and this is kind of one that you've probably seen because it's fairly popular, and that is the good old Big Lebowski. I'm certainly not as big a fan where I'm going to go to those Lebowski conventions they have and whatnot. I'm not going to join whatever weird religion has spawned up from that sort of thing, but it's another fun movie. John Goodman does an amazing job. Steve Buscemi, the whole cast. I mean, it's another one where it's got a lot of great character actors. You know, Sam Elliott when he shows up in it. Just kind of a fun, weird little, I don't know, adventure, not really, but just kind of, I don't know, set of circumstance. I don't know how you'd quite describe the Big Lebowski if you haven't seen it.
I would say it's an involuntary adventure.
Yeah, kind of. You know, the dude, you know, the titular Big Lebowski gets kind of pulled along, for the most part against his will, into all these weird happenings and shenanigans and, you know, because he just wants to get his rug back, you know. It really tied the room together.
It really did.
It did. It was a good rug. But yeah, Big Lebowski, if for some strange reason you have not seen it, check it out. It's cool. I like it. It's fun to watch.
My last movie, it's an older classic, but once again, it, you know, happens, the movie's themed during the hot summer days and everything, and I always feel like I could sit and watch Cool Hand Luke. I always enjoy that movie.
Hard-boiled eggs.
Hard-boiled eggs. You sass back and spend a night in the box. It's one of those movies that if you're asked, what's the plot of the movie? It's a hard way to say it. I mean, it's essentially where you have Paul Newman's character is essentially, he's just kind of given up on life and doesn't care where his life goes until he, you know, gets sent to a jail because of vandalism. He, you know, starts becoming a legend there because of, you know, just his mannerisms and how he does things. But then it's when his mother gets fatally sick and is about to die that, you know, he wants to get out of there and real, you know, it's an interesting movie in the self. I would strongly recommend it. It's one of those movies that there's a lot of references that are made to it from other movies and other parts of popular entertainment, but Cool Hand Luke would be one of my last choices, my top three.
Nice. Good call.
All right.
Simpsons.
So the Simpsons. So we're going to kind of cover this in a few different ways. We're going to kind of bullet point it over, I think, the growing period of time of it. Because if you were to watch The Simpsons now, I mean, you're talking 30 years that this show has been out at this point.
Yes, it's kind of gotten unruly. And I think part of it, I mean, it's easy, I think, for us and everybody to say like that it's been bad these last several years. But I think it's, you know, it's been around for so long. I think that it's got so many different entry points. Like there's people who probably watch it and love it now that have never seen, you know, our favorite years, which are, you know, those first 10, 15, you know, 15 is probably even stretching it.
That's the hard thing, too, is even if you were to watch it in syndication, the odds of you seeing some of the maybe classic or better episodes or finding those good episodes is harder. I think with Disney Plus, when that comes out in a couple of months, the fact that now Fox is owned by Disney and that's going to be made available through Disney Plus, that's huge. I would love the ability now to watch The Simpsons. I know you can do it if you have FX Plus or, yes, you know, use an app, but it's not a very streamlined way to be able to watch their episodes right now.
Yeah, it's kind of a pain in the butt way. I think it'll be nice and handy when they're on Disney Plus to find the episodes and watch them.
Where their ultimate origins came from is actually another show which, in retrospect, I watched the show when I was younger, and that's because when you're like 10 or 11 years old, you don't really know what cool things are, and I didn't have cable, so you basically watched what was on network TV.
Yeah, there were, what, four at the time? This was It was on Fox in its very early days. Well, the show right. we're talking about is the Tracy Ullman Show, which was, I don't know if it was one of the original launch shows, but it was definitely early on in its life.
It was definitely there early in life. It got a lot of award nominations and a lot of praise. Tracy Ullman, a British comedian, she was very quirky. She kind of almost basically took the formula from Carol Burnett and having like a, almost like a comedic variety show in some ways, where you had comedy act, you know, bits, you had like, you know, musical numbers that were intertwined in there, and then you had other things. And one of the things that was ingrained there is the cast members of the show itself also voiced a cartoon that was being done by Matt Groening, who of course was a cartoonist at the time. And
yes, for what was it, Life in Hell, I think is yep. what it was called. It was, I think primarily, I don't know if it was in college newspapers, but it wasn't like a widespread, like it wasn't something you'd find in your typical Sunday paper, but it was kind of out there, I think, in some of your smaller, you know, like the city pages here, your local city newspapers, I think.
Nobody knows who the city pages are if they're out of the state, John.
That's why I said your local, you know, like your local artsy type newspapers where, you know, you get them for free in every street corner in your major metropolitan
Iowa areas. Doesn't have that, John.
Sure they do. They have the Des Moines.
Nebraska pages doesn't have that, something. John.
Sure they do. They have the something time, so you know, whatever. But
but
yeah,
so I mean it was a series of like just cartoon vignettes which were like about maybe about 4 minutes long or so, and it featured the antics of a family called the Simpsons, which was Homer, Marge, Bart, you know, Maggie and Lisa. And I think anybody nowadays knows who all these main characters of the Simpsons were, but back then animation was just absolutely horrible. But
yeah, especially when you look at it compared to now, it was super crude. And even compared to the first couple seasons of The Simpsons, it was a lot cruder than it got eventually became.
Right. I mean, I think with any idea, you got to refine it. You have to take something and figure out what works with it, kind of polish it up. But ironically enough, those segments of the cartoon segments of the Tracy Ullman Show, they realized were some of the most popular aspects of the show that people were always watching. So Fox needed more programming. Well, let's make a cartoon based on these characters. So they made a cartoon of it. And the first season,
well, I think technically didn't it start with a Christmas special? Wasn't that the first episode before it launched into the... You're right.
It was a Christmas special, and then after the Christmas special, it went into the first season. And the first season itself, I think the reason why it was as loved as it was that early on is because you had not had a primetime cartoon on television like that almost since like the Flintstones or Jetsons almost.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I can't think of anything in the 80s really that was prime, you know, the cartoons, the only place you got them then was like Saturday morning or in the afternoons and the weekdays.
So it was kind of a cartoon, but it was also more of like, it was a kind of cartoon that was adult themed. There was stuff there for the kids, but it was also more or less, hey, you know, here's the jokes for the adults as well. And I think the reason The Simpsons did as well as it did within, let's say, I think the first season is because of one reason. I think that's easy. Bart Simpson.
Yes.
Bart was that kid who had all the cool catchphrases. Don't have a cow, man. Eat my shorts.
Yeah, I carumba.
I carumba, cowabunga.
Yeah.
He had all these like catchphrases. And ironically enough, like those first couple of years of The Simpsons, that's all you saw was like bootleg Simpsons shirts.
Yes, everywhere.
So I would say that, you know, you have that. You got to the first two seasons, and I think the first two seasons are tricky seasons to watch.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like any TV show, for the most part, they're a little rough, you know, it's trying to find its feet, it's, you know, it's developing the characters, you know, Homer's voice even changed after a while, after Dan Castellaney decided that he couldn't keep doing it that way, because it just was wrecking his voice and his throat.
Well, he was trying to do, what's his name?
Walter Matthau.
Yeah, Walter Matthau, yeah. Basically, and yeah, he just had to ditch that just because the voice itself was just getting, you know, rough.
Yeah, it wasn't something you could do on a regular basis. So, yeah, those first couple seasons, there's some good stuff in there.
In the first season, I don't know, man. I mean,
I'm sure there's a few there. I'd have to look at the episodes to see which ones, but I'm sure there's some decent stuff there. Certainly not as good as it would become.
Well, you have, like, Bart the General. That's where he fights back against, like, Nelson and the gang with water balloons. And you had One-Armed Herman, who was a character who would disappear into obscurity.
Yeah.
There was like the Telltale Head where, like, you know, Bart cuts off the head of Jebediah Springfield, you know, Homer's Night Out, you know, Krusty Gets Busted, which is probably the only big thing about Krusty Gets Busted is two things. What is it?
Oh, I don't even know. Is that when Sideshow?
Yep.
What's his name first came?
Sideshow Bob is the introduction. Do you know who directed that episode?
I do not.
Brad Bird.
Interesting.
Right.
I knew he did some Simpsons. I suppose that should have been my guess, but...
But yeah, Brad Bird directed that episode, which introduced Sideshow Bob, one of the better characters, you know, guest characters, with Kesley Grammer voicing Bob itself. So, I mean, it was only 13 episodes, or like 12 episodes for that first season, and it was good for what it was, because there was nothing else back then that would
compare. Yeah, it was kind of like in the middle of a drought, any bit of water will do.
The second season, that's when you had the first Treehouse of Horror, which I think was a very unique anthology aspect of it. You had Dancing Homer, where like Homer was the dancing mascot for the Springfield Isotopes. Itchy, Scratchy, and Marge, where she gets Itchy and Scratchy, you know, stop made.
Is that the second season?
That's the second season.
Okay, I would have thought that was later.
Right. So you had, like, you know, I think where once again it was just starting to form itself out. It was starting to get itself good. I honestly, The Simpsons really didn't hit its full stride until probably the third season. And I would say that it wasn't even until, I think, of a certain part of the third season. So first and foremost, do you remember what the opening episode was for season three and why that was such a big deal?
I'm sure I'll know the episode when you tell me what it is, but I don't know what the season opener was.
It was Stark Raving Dad, which is the episode which is infamous for two reasons, because Michael Jackson was in it,
yes,
but he wasn't in it.
The ever popular uncredited Michael Jackson cameo.
Essentially, it's about Homer who, you know, because his shirt got washed in with red shirts, it's pink, and they eventually sentence him to a mental asylum because they think he's crazy for wearing a pink shirt. He meets a guy who says he is Michael Jackson, who sounds like Michael Jackson, but is like a big, fat, white guy.
Yes.
And ultimately, Homer brags about meeting Michael Jackson, and all his kids are going nuts. And then you find out, well, maybe it's not Michael Jackson. But the thing is that he does voice the character.
It didn't come out right away, I don't think, but...
Well, it was also right around when The Simpsons had also the Bartman. They had like being like a big song that came out and they released. It wasn't.
This was prime like Simpsons mania. You know, T-shirts everywhere, toys. Well, not toys as much. That didn't come till later, but just merchandising all over the place.
But I mean, after that was the episode that everybody tuned in to watch because, like, the number of millions of viewers was like 22.9 million viewers for that episode. And everybody was like, you know, wow, is it an actual Michael Jackson or not? You had other episodes that season that, you know, you had when, like, Flanders Failed, where he had the Leftorium, which was always a funny one. You had, Like Father, Like Clown with Krusty's dad. You had another Treehouse of Horror. Honestly, I think that Simpsons didn't really hit their real super perfect stride until you got to Flaming Moe's.
Yeah, I was just looking at the episode titles here, and yeah, Flaming Moe's is definitely one of the big classic, you know, where Moe gets his bar turned into this big sensation, that's definitely kind of one of the classic episodes.
Right, then you have the one where, the episode where Burn sells the plant to the Germans, you have, like, Radio Bart where Bart gets in the well, and you have Sting in there. You had
the baseball episode.
Oh, Homer at Bat is just probably the most... I think that was one of the episodes where you saw, like, all these major league players, and you couldn't help but geek out at some of the shit that you had going on in that episode. So yeah. I think that season three is where The Simpsons not only, I think, became... They were ingrained in culture to begin with, but I think that's when they ascended and realized that we are going to be probably one of the best shows you're ever going to see in terms of comedy and humor when it comes down to it. And that's where they had, you know, contributions around that time as well from Conan O'Brien started joining in around that period of time, and he had a huge influence on the show before, you know, he had his, you know, own talk show itself. I mean, I would say that, you know, the season three is where basically it took a huge swing and a huge leap forward. And this is where... I would say the golden years, if I were to say, for The Simpsons, seasons 4 through 8.
Yeah, I would agree. I think 8, that's where definitely the bulk of the episodes each season is great. Season 8 hits, and yeah, they definitely kind of start to decline there. And I would say, you know, somewhere around 11 or 12, I think, is when it kind of falls off for me, at least. I think that's when I stopped buying, like, the DVDs when they came out, was, like, around 11 or 12.
Well, I think the key to this is that with the... episodes, I think the key why those episodes are so good is that it was some of the most intelligent and clever writing that you would see. Even though it was a cartoon, I think they did such an amazing job in just having just little throwaway jokes or premises that were just funny at the time. They didn't feel derivative. They just, like, one of my favorite, like, dumb gags, I think, from around those seasons is, like, the guy Incognito ad, a gag, where basically a guy comes in the Moe's and he has a mustache and, like, hey, Homer, come on, give it up. We know it's you. Homer? Who's Homer? My name is Guy Incognito. And they beat him up and they throw him out of the bar and Homer walks by like, hey, that guy looks just like me.
Yeah.
I mean, those
stuff.
I mean, those are just those moments you just sat there and laugh at because they were smart. They were funny. I mean, I think each episode had like two or three like little gags or bits in there that didn't really pertain to the episode, but they were just clever one-off jokes that were just so funny that they stood so well on their own.
He eats more like a duck.
Yeah. Eats like a duck. But I think seasons 4 through 8 were probably where The Simpsons definitely hit their bigger stride. I mean, season 4, some of the more legendary episodes that you have that everybody loves. You have Mr. Plow. You got Marge and the Monorail, which is
monorail.
Great.
Monorail.
Yeah.
Monorail.
Right, you got, like, you know, Last Exit to Springfield. I mean, you had just episodes where they were just starting to get funny, and I think as each season went on, they just kept getting funnier and funnier, because in season 5, like, some of the ones I think that hold up strong in season 5, oh, let's see, you got Cape Fear, which is basically a ripoff of...
Yeah, that's, you know, getting back to Sideshow Bob, that's one of his... you know, second or third appearance, I want to say.
Yep, because he kept appearing in, you know, various episodes. You had Boy Scouts in the Hood with Ernest Borgnine in there. That's just downright hilarious. One of my favorite episodes, Springfield, the whole Burns' Casino episode is in there.
Yeah. Gambler!
Homer the Vigilante. It's like, hey, I want to join you guys too. Well, do you have a pillowcase full of brass doorknobs? Do I? Yeah. You had Deep Space Homer, which gives you the inanimate carbon rod, which is just downright hilarious.
Just hook it up to my veins.
Right. So, I mean, you had, like, you know, so many great episodes. You segue into, like, season 6, and once again, you just, I think they had one of the best, you know, Treehouse of Horrors that was in that season itself.
Is that the Time Toaster one?
Is that 5 or 6? Yep, that is the Time Toaster one. Yeah. So that is probably
the Time Toaster, the Shinning, and I forget what the third one is.
Right. You had Homie the Clown in that, where Homer, you know, goes to clown college. You Bart versus Australia. I mean, I think that's... They also had one of the weirdest things, too, where they had a kind of almost like a cliffhanger where they had that end of the season, Who Shot Mr. Burns?
Yeah, and that was a takeoff on, what was it, Dallas from probably a decade earlier, where the big cliffhanger was Who Shot JR? And it was this huge mystery, and I remember that summer people were kind of dissecting it and talking about it, and who did, you know, what did he, you know, I think they even had a special for the summer, I think, didn't they, where they kind of showed, like, you know, possible theories and who could have done it. I think which the prevailing one was Waylon Smithers, but that was not who ended up actually shooting him. I will not spoil it. Go watch
it yourself. I'll spoil it. It was Maggie.
Oh, damn it.
The funny thing is you rewatch it and you kind of almost see, all right, there, if you were really being that anal retentive, then yeah, you can kind of see some of the clues in there. But which, you know, segues to season 7. You have Radioactive Man. The goggles, they do nothing.
They do nothing.
You have Bart selling a soul to Milhouse. You have King Size Homer. Homer in a Moomoo.
Yeah, that's that late. I thought that was earlier. Wow.
Nope, that is season 7. Wow. So
I thought that was like 4 or so.
Nope. I mean, that's why I say those 4 seasons, they just...
Yeah, they all kind of meld together because there's just so much good stuff in those, you know, 4 or 5 years there. You know, the golden years, if you want to call them that.
22 short films about Springfield. Are you making fun of my carb? It's all I can afford and I can't help being tall.
It's me.
And then I think the last season, I think, you know, where they really had, and what I mean by probably best is where I'd say about 80 to 90% of the season was golden. They didn't have really too many filler episodes where you sat there and groaned about. Because in season 8, you have You Only Move Twice. Great episode.
Yep. The Bond one.
You have the Homer They Fall, where Homer becomes a boxer. Milhouse Divided, where Milhouse's parents get divorced.
Yes.
You got the El Vieja Misteriosa de Nuestra Homer, The Mysterious Voyage of Homer, where you have Johnny Cash as the coyote after he's at the chili contest.
Yep. The Guatemalan Insanity Chili.
You have the Springfield Files, which has probably one of the most funniest portrayals of the X-Files done in such a straight-laced manner.
Yeah.
You got the Itchy, Scratchy, and Poochie show. Once again, the Poochie being one of the most famous tropes to come out of The Simpsons that have been applied to almost everywhere else.
Yeah.
Homer versus the 18th Amendment. I'll get you, Beer Baron. No, you won't.
Yeah.
And you have, of course, Homer's Enemy, which I have such a warm, warm, warm place for.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That same thing? Yeah, there it is. Number 23 towards the end of the season.
Right, because then when you get after that, when you hit season 9, I think part of the problem is that's when the win rate goes down for, I think, The Simpsons. I think that's where, instead of 80% of the episodes being great, it starts dropping down to like about 70, which even if you're striking about 70% of the time on a show. Yeah,
that's still pretty damn good for a show that goes 25, 26 episodes a season.
I think the trick is you start noticing, though, that I think around that time is when the show starts getting self-referential. And that's where all of a sudden, instead of clever writing, it's like, this time, Homer does this now.
Yeah, I think they got a lot more gimmicky. Yeah, you got the stuff like that. You got the, Apu has lots of babies.
That's, I think, when they started overdosing on guest stars, where they had a lot of celebrities who wanted to do The Simpsons. So they started bringing in all these people, and it started becoming an issue because, going into season 10, I mean, I'm looking over some of the episodes. Ugh. Yeah, Merits of the Mob, I kind of like that. It was one of my favorite ones. Yeah, I got Homer to the Max. That one's actually pretty decent.
Yeah, I think this is when you start getting into where there's, a handful of good episodes a season. And that, I think that maintains for a few years. And then once you get up to, season 11 or 12 is when it's kind of I'm sure there's good stuff there, but not, certainly not classic. Like a lot of the stuff from before were classic to us, I should say.
Right, because, I think 7... Like season 11, going over some of the episodes that were on there that were good. I guess EIEI, Hanoi Grunt, wasn't that bad. That was when Homer had the tobacco farm with Tomacos.
Tobacco.
Right. That's when they actually had something serious happen where they killed off Ned's wife.
Yeah.
I swore that. No, I guess that isn't that season. I mean, I'm looking at this, and the hit rate definitely goes down, I think, to around that 50% range or so, where you can see where there's just a lot of just weird things there. Season 12, Tale of Two Springfields, nope. Homer versus Dignity, nope. The Computer Wore Men's Shoes. Oh, I love that episode.
Which one's that one?
That's the one that spoofs The Prisoner, where Homer has his website, Mr. X.
Oh, yes, yeah. That one is pretty dang good.
That was one of those few times where it actually hits pretty well. What season was it where Homer was the missionary?
Thank you, Jeebus.
Was that the episode name for that was what, missionary? Oh, that was the previous one. That was also season 11 with Missionary Impossible. That was also one of my favorites. But yeah, going through a lot of these episodes, I remember the episodes, and you can definitely see where the whiff factor starts going up a lot higher on a lot of these. And man, maybe I'm being too generous going all the way up to 15.
Yeah, I would say so personally for myself. And like I said, I haven't watched it in probably 20 years. I don't know, 2000, I want to say, somewhere around that neck of the woods is when I dropped off, where just, they ended up relying a lot more on the, Patty and Solomar getting married again, or, just this weird, just like we said, gimmick episodes where it was the, where something that was, contemporary event or something, just things like that, whereas that was never really something that the show had relied on previously,
Well, I think part of the problem, too, is that you have, people say this now about, shows like Family Guy as an example, or oh, it's just become so derivative and repetitive. And The Simpsons have been that for 15 years, and if not for the fact that they were as beloved as they were, I mean, they weren't like the Family Guy where they got canceled and had to fight their way back.
They've been a pretty constant presence.
Right. So I'd say definitely influential show, because when you look at how many animated shows that came out of this in the 90s, 2000s, or so forth.
This, well, I think it even spawned like the animation boom of the, you know, the mid 90s. I mean, you had this, you had The Critic, you had, you know, I mean, Futurama a little bit later on, you had, you know, I mean, there was just so much stuff that came out. You know, it was like The Simpsons became this huge hit, and then everybody kind of rushed to, you know, like, we need to make our own animated show and, you know, cash in on this. You know, the Clerks cartoon that came out a few years after that, and, you know, it just started this boom of animation that I think really, you kind of had a glut of it for a while there where there wasn't, you know, some good stuff and some not, but I think now it's kind of just become another, you know, it's not the thing that they're, that, you know, this big boom now, but it's just, it's, oh, that's an animated show, and it's kind of become an accepted genre of TV, you know, type show. Like, it's, you know, there's animated shows, there's crime dramas, there's reality shows, there's game shows. It's just another genre out there, and there's good ones and there's bad ones, just like every other TV show.
Yeah, I think the trick with a show like this is that it's, I don't know who would ever want to sit there and say, we're going to pull the plug on it. It's such a beloved show. I don't think there's an executive out there that wants to be the guy known for killing The Simpsons. But
I would agree, but I think it's bound to happen sooner rather than later. I think, I mean, you know,
how many more years do you think it goes on?
We're at, what, 30 or so now, or we're closing in on 30? I
would honestly say I don't see it going more than maybe about 3 to 5 years, because we already had, like, the entire cast already almost strike on the show just because.
Oh, yeah, they're not cheap to be paid right now.
Right.
They're making a nice chunk of change, as they should be. I mean, the show wouldn't be what it is without the voice talent.
I mean, at some point, from an economy standpoint, they'll look at what the viewership is on the show and sit there and look at what the cost of the cast is, and they have to say, you know what,
yeah,
we just can't justify it anymore. But
yeah, and I would say I wouldn't be surprised at the end of whatever contract they're in the middle of, however long that takes them, I would be surprised, you know, now that Disney owns Fox, that they're just like, you know, 30 years is a good run. We've got a bit of back catalog here that we can syndicate until we're all dead for centuries, and, you know, we're going to be good. So,
and if you're the cast, too, yeah, it's making a lot of money now, but guess what? That syndication money is always going to be there. I would say that if they were smart, they would end it and then have, like, a movie to be almost like the end cap of it almost.
Yeah, I don't know that they'd do a movie to end it all. I think they'd go for the big, you know, finale that everybody's going to watch, you know, like, I'm, you know, we'll watch it. I'm sure I'll watch it whenever it is, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. But I, you know, and I could almost see maybe they come back once in a while to do movie features or something like that once every while, just to kind of cash in on the, you know, the popularity of it and the longevity of it, you know, kind of like Futurama did for a little bit there. But yeah, 30 years.
Let's talk some of the best and worst of The Simpsons. Now, we each have a list here, and starting off, I'd say best and worst Simpsons character, and you can use core, main, or secondary on there, I guess, in terms of how you want to look at it for the most part, but who is your, I think, best Simpsons character?
I've got a couple here. I think best isn't necessarily, I suppose she's maybe my favorite. I think Lisa's probably the best character on there, because I think she's the most well-rounded.
No.
No, you disagree?
I'll disagree. I'll let you go first, though.
I just think she's one of the few characters on there who's actually been kind of allowed to have a personality and have kind of, you know, things that define her. You know, like Bart's a troublemaker, you know, and Lisa's the smart one, but she's also got all these other defining categories. You know, she's a vegetarian, she's, you know, loves animals, all this stuff. I think she's just kind of the most well-rounded. She's, you know, almost the straight character, straight man of the show. You know, she doesn't really get a lot of the funny bits, although she does have funny, you know, lines here and there. But I would say Lisa, I think, is probably the best and most well-rounded character.
Only reason I'll disagree is this. I look at her episodes that are Lisa-centric episodes. If you take away Lisa the vegetarian, any of her other episodes are always very boring yawns to me for the most part. I mean, I think the problem with Lisa is this, is that since she's so dramatically different from her family, I get why she's there to help, you know, balance out the family or help create an eternal foil for them. I just never found her to be that interesting.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I won't argue that too much. She's not for everybody, but I think she does a good job.
See, I had to sit there and I had to think hard. It's like, who's the best Simpsons character? And who's a character that whenever they're on screen, I feel you can always have the most consistent amount of laughs for, in the sense that, you know, and as I said, I'm looking at this more in the more primary character range. I would sit there and say that I don't think there's ever a time you sit there and you get bored when Principal Skinner's on the actual screen itself. His deadpan, dry delivery of everything, that always, I think, is just such an amazing crack up of the oblivious principal. And
yeah, not a favorite of mine, I would say. He's not bad, but, you know, I'll give it to you. I kind of broke it down, like, for, you know, like, primary main characters, you know, like the main cast that you see a fair amount of the time. One of my favorite secondary characters, I would say, that kind of falls under that the criteria that you gave of, you know, the whenever they're on screen, they're always a good time. And that's Ralph Wiggum. He's got some of the best one-liners. He's just kind of just completely clueless, you know, takes after his dad in that regard, who, you know, just happens to be the chief of police. But Ralph is always good times. I like seeing Ralph.
If I had to say secondary character, I think my favorite secondary character is Gil. Gil the salesman.
Yeah, you always had a thing for Gil.
I do. I have my Gil figure still.
Nice. I think I got rid of my Simpson figures.
Well, and I think, because you know who Gil's based off of, right?
I'll probably know when you tell me.
He's based off Shelley Levine from the Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, I always thought that was also just like pathetic, and that's one of like my favorite Simpson moments too is when you have it where like Gil's trying to sell the Coleco's to the Chalmers.
There's a rust up here. Seal the deal, Gil. Seal the deal.
How many can I put you down for? Please say a lot. I need a lot here. Oh, I need to eat. Or when they throw like his hot plate out of a hot air balloon. I've been living in there. Oh.
Yeah, good old Gil. Gil's good stuff.
Worst Simpsons character, mine, he's the reason they're popular, but man, I just don't like Bart.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. His first 2-3 years, his rebellious thing is what propelled the Simpsons to like the forefront. But then once he hit his peak, I think in season 2 or 3, that's when like every other character, I think, got much funnier than him, because he basically, the whole rebel shtick just got boring. I mean,
yeah,
it's like, oh, he's a rebel. And that's where I think Homer then eventually became the more funnier, consistent character on the show.
Yeah, Homer definitely. And, you know, I think we both kind of overlooked Homer for favorite character. I think but he's also probably, I think, the most obvious if we both say Homer, because you
know. I think the only reason I didn't pick Homer as my favorite character is that I feel in his prime episodes, he's fine. As the later episodes go on, he basically becomes the prototype for what Peter Griffin would, like, Homer now does this, or Homer now becomes this. And all of a sudden, like, the whole charm of just this hapless parent goes just south, and it just becomes this dumb cipher that basically you project onto.
Yeah. Least favorite for me, I don't know, it's hard to say, because, like, most things, when it comes to least favorite, I just don't dwell on it a whole lot.
You got to learn to embrace your hate.
Embrace the hatred.
I'm afraid your friends will die.
The one that comes to mind right now that I'm not, you know, I wouldn't say I hate him, but I just
say it, hate him.
Doesn't really, okay, I hate Krusty the Clown. He just, I don't know, he's never really done anything for me. He's just kind of, he's got a shtick of his goofy laugh. He's got the TV show. He just, yeah, he's just Krusty. He's, yeah, he's there.
I like Krusty. I like the whole washed up bit where he's not popular, but he's like clinging to every last ounce of fame that he can, be it just by selling out as much as he can. And he maybe at one point was truly a funny entertainer. And
yeah, he just doesn't do a whole lot for me. I mean, yeah, without him, we don't get Sideshow Bob, who, you know, we'll get to later, but,
or Mel,
you know, yeah, or good old Mel. But yeah, no, I'm not a huge fan of Krusty.
All right. Best, worst episode. I feel
like best episodes, we kind of hit most of them just in going over the seasons there.
Mine's a tie. I couldn't pick between these two. Not one of them, you know automatically which one I'm going to talk.
Yes, yeah, we mentioned the good old, and it's probably one of my favorites. I'm blinking on the name of it now. Grimy, freaking
Homer's Enemy.
Yeah, there we go.
It is probably one of the most brutal episodes ever, where what makes it so funny is that it's almost like a true outsider view of how absurd Homer's life is.
Yeah, I would
that
say it's...
Everything works out for Homer despite his incompetence.
If you haven't seen an episode of The Simpsons, this is probably a pretty good one to watch, because, I mean, The Simpsons themselves are just kind of inherently ridiculous as you're watching the show. And this is basically like if you took somebody from the real world and put them in The Simpsons, because Frank Grimes is this,
hardworking, every man that built himself from nothing.
He starts working at the power plant, and he's doing his best, but he just can't get a catch a break. And he points, he's like, "Can't you all see how ridiculous Homer is?" And he just, you know, which he is, and everybody's just kind of like, "Yeah, I don't know, it's Homer, it's the way he is." And
it's the funny thing is, we all know that person in our life that is that amusing guy. He's liked to a certain extent, but everybody like enables their behaviors, and they succeed because everybody else just gives him a pass. And it's like, well, it's just Homer being Homer, and it's like, yeah, but doesn't that bother any of you that?
Yeah.
So Homer's Enemy, I think, definitely is one of my, if there's the 1A of my favorite episodes, if there's a 1B episode, I mean.
That's one we also discussed earlier, I think, is at the, I can't think of the title. I'm horrible with the titles, the James Bond one.
You Only Move Twice.
Yes, I think is another, that one. Is it Hank Scorpio?
Yeah, it is with Hank Scorpio, essentially like, this organization's trying to lure away various people from the nuclear power plant because they need somebody to help work on their nuclear power plant, which is actually secretly a nuclear weapon. It turns out Homer's hired by a Bond-like villain to work. And Homer actually, it's an amusing reversal of fortune because Homer actually is successful in enjoying his job where he's never had success before, but every other member of the family suffers in the process. Yeah. They don't have the chance to excel.
Yeah, it's basically this utopia town that they move to, but I forget what happens to each of the other family members, but something comes along. I think Marge just gets bored, I think.
She can't even become an alcoholic. She's like, she drinks basically 2 glasses of wine a day and just sits there bored. Lisa has allergies.
Yeah.
So Bart gets put in the remedial class, and Maggie gets stuck in the swing-ma thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another... I think those two are probably... choice episodes. Another favorite of mine is that Treehouse of Horror episode with the Time Toaster, and the shinning is probably the best of the Treehouse of Horror episodes. So I think that's a good base of, you know, if you're going to spend an hour with The Simpsons some night, those are 3 episodes you can, you know, can't miss with.
Embrace your hate. What's the worst episode?
Again, I don't. The one that comes to mind, it's...
Damn it, just get angry.
Is the... There's one later on. It's in the later years. Homer joins a religious cult or so. It's kind of a take on the Heaven's Gate deal.
I know which episode you're talking about. I like that episode for a few reasons. There's some of my favorite moments on there. It's the one where basically, there was the one that Brad Goodman, I think, is the...
Yeah, that could
No. That's the one with the Bart, Be the Boy. But yeah, there's the whole cult and everything, and
it just, I remember that being the episode that first kind of clicked, and like, wow, the show's just kind of turned into gimmicks all of a sudden, and you know, because Homer joins a cult now, and
one of my favorite lines from that episode though is when they're trying to show him the brainwashing video, and he's like, wow, so did the Internal Affairs know the cop was crooked all along?
I don't think that's the one I'm thinking of though. I think that's earlier. This is one from season 11 or 12, and I want to say that one is earlier on. I want to say.
I think that's the same episode.
I don't think so.
Here's the problem is that since you suck with title episodes, episode titles and premises, your criticism is suspect.
Because I want to say that one's from a different one. I could be wrong, but yes. Anyway, yeah.
My there's an episode, it'd be from the earlier season, and if you know that I've already said that I don't like Lisa that much. It's Lisa the Greek. That's the one where Lisa helps Homer with betting on football, and basically, that was one of those episodes where it really felt that Lisa was kind of just shoehorned in there, and I had to think about that, and it's like that's an episode I really didn't like that much for some reason. It just rubbed me wrong. That's where I think after that episode, every episode after that, if it was a Lisa-centric episode, I'm like, God damn it, it's a Lisa episode.
Damn it, it's a brand chapter.
Best and worst guest star.
I think we kind of tipped our card a little bit to best guest star. I'm going with Kelsey Grammer and Sideshow Bob.
I chose different.
Ah, interesting. Did he show up once a season or once every other season, I want to say?
It was about once a season. He maybe took a season off every now and then.
And it started with he was a... Krusty's sidekick on his show, and he got kicked off for some reason, I forget why, and he kind of wanted to take revenge on Krusty and kill him, but I think Bart thwarted it.
Well, no, and he didn't get kicked off. The reason what happened is he was his sidekick, and then he framed Krusty for a robbery, then after that he went to jail.
And he went to jail, and Bart was the one who caught him, and,
because of the big feet.
And so after that, he just had this mad on for Bart, and like every season he'd show up in an episode and tried to kill Bart in some weird way.
Or affect his family in some shape, way, or form.
Yeah, so that's who I went with. It was good old Kelsey Grammer and Sideshow Bob.
One character I went with, and he did various voice work on multiple episodes, is Albert Brooks, who, of course, does the voice of Hank Scorpio.
Yes.
But he was also in other episodes earlier before that, and he did a good job in those episodes. But I'm sorry, his Hank Scorpio performance is just downright iconic in terms of just the overall maniacal madman and just the delivery of everything as well. So God bless you, Albert Brooks. Who do you hate, John? Who do you hate?
There have been so many damn guest stars, and again, they're just forgettable for me when I don't.
There's an easy one, John.
Who?
There's an easy one.
Who do you have? Let's see if I can.
My easy one of who to hate is that once again, if we're talking one of the biggest gimmicks they ever used to try to draw on an audience, and it really wasn't even that great of an episode. It's Michael Jackson.
Yeah, that was one that came to mind. Definitely. I mean, it's hard to pick that one for me just because they didn't. You know, I mean, later on when the guest star thing became the thing, it was come and see, you know, Sting or come see Aerosmith, come see, you know.
Right.
Whereas since that wasn't one that they hyped up, you know, it didn't come out till later, I kind of find it hard to.
I think Michael Jackson is what really helped spring a lot of it out. They were like, hey, if Michael Jackson's going to be on the show, then everybody else wants to be on the show. But his episode really wasn't entertaining. They use of his music talents, all right, huh?
Lisa, it's your birthday. Yeah. Happy birthday, Lisa.
No, that whole episode.
I think a lot of the ones that kind of fall flat for me are just when the celebrities would show up and play themselves for the most part. There's some that are better, you know, like when Kid Rock shows up and he's doing a concert or.
Oh, fuck Kid Rock.
Or for various reasons. You know, U2 or whatever. I think there's some that work, you know, like Mark Hamill showed up in one when he's in the convention and Homer.
That's actually a good episode, though. That's Mayor to the Mob. That's yes. Where he becomes home, Chief Quimby's bodyguard. And that's where Luke does Guys and Dolls.
Yes.
Luke, be a Jedi tonight.
Yep, at the dinner theater. I think that's one where one of the, you know, exceptions to the rule, where I think Mark Hamill kind of comes in and he kind of plays himself, but not really. But I think the ones where they come in like, hi, I'm Kid Rock, and I'm going to do, you know, kind of hit you over the head with it were the ones that were just like, oh, God.
It's when the ones that come on the show, but they bring something to the table, and it's not it's not like, hey, I just want to be on the show. It's like, I want to be on the show, and I want to actually be funny.
Yeah.
I think, the difference there versus, like, when you have, like, the walk-on. Like, I remember there was an episode where Bret the Hitman Hart was going to buy Burns's, like, mansion. I'm like, what a weird use of Bret Hart.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think those ones where it was just like, you know, hey, look, it's a good famous person, as opposed to the ones where it was somebody voicing a character or, you know, or doing a different, you know, like Leonard Nimoy when he played himself in the monorail episode, I think is a good usage of him.
Right. It's when characters are willing to make fun of themselves and be self-depreciative. That's when I think that's the best use of a star. Like David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson on the X-Files episode is perfect because they're playing their characters from the X-Files, but they're also playing it in a sardonic way where, like, yeah, we realize how absurd these characters are at times too, and just kind of made fun of it as well. And that's, I think, what makes a good guest star appearance on there.
Yes.
Best and worst Treehouse of Terror. I think we can agree that the trilogy with the Time Toaster, the Shinning, and then
what did we say that was four?
That was five.
Yeah.
Which was in season six.
Yes, because the first season didn't have one.
Right. But I think that one right there was what nailed the concept of the Treehouse of Terror. You have basically the rift on the Shinning where, you know, Bart, you know, basically, Burns brings Homer up to a manor to watch over his manor, but takes away all the beer, which makes Homer go something, something.
Something, something. Don't mind if I do.
Go crazy. Don't mind if I do.
Yeah.
Then you have, of course, after that, the Time Toaster, where Homer has a toaster, which lets him travel through time and his alterations. Which,
for some reason, there's that opening scene in that one where he gets his hand stuck in the toaster is like one of my all-time favorite Simpsons, where it's just he gets his hand in the toaster, he's running, he's banging it on stuff, and finally he thinks he gets it off.
Dad, it's on your head again.
He slumps against the refrigerator, and then Bart's like, Dad, it's on there again. And then he goes through for some reason that every time I watch it, it just cracks me up. I don't know why.
And then you have the last, which is where, like, they're eating the students in the school. All the faculty's eating the students, and you could say we have a little ooter in all of us.
Sloppy Jimbos. Yeah.
Please, do we have any more Sloppy Jimbos, please? But I think that's where it was something where it had the right amount of grimness and creepiness. And it was funny because the whole arc about Willie getting the axe in his back. Well, I'm very bad at this.
Yes.
I'd say the worst Treehouse of Terror, for me, it's the Raven. Where
basically, that's what I was going to say. I think that's the first one, isn't it?
That's the first season where essentially it's just a retelling of Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven, where Bart's the Raven, and it's...
Well, that one, and I forget what the other two are, but I remember that whole, you know, which I think is just it falling kind of prey to, you know, just like the first couple seasons of a TV show to kind of find its legs. I think the Treehouse of Horror episodes were kind of finding their legs, and especially that first one was just like, it's an okay, cool Halloween special, but whatever, you know, and I think after having done several more, it definitely improved.
All right, and then our last category we have here is best and worst one-shot character. With this, I had to hold it to where the character was only in one episode. So I think my, once again, I got a 1A, 1B situation right here, which is ironically mirrors my 1A, 1B of my favorite episodes.
Well, can technically Frank Grimes be your favorite one-shot character since he was kind of in a second episode?
He was not. It was his son.
It was, but he was, you know, he was...
It was his son. That was where you took a great idea and then you fucked it all up because you're like, hey, Frank Grimes, perfect, he's dead. Instead, it's like, oh, look, it's Frank Grimes' son. And it's like,
spoilers, Frank Grimes dies at the end.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's still a great episode. Oh, it is. And then Hank Scorpio. Obviously, I think those are your two best single characters, both in that eighth season that were just amazing.
Yeah, that's hard to argue, really.
Good stuff. If you got anybody else besides those two?
No, I don't think. I mean, as far as just one shot in one, I'm sure there's some other pretty good ones, but yeah, those are definitely one and two, I think.
Right. If there is a worst one shot character, who's yours?
Are we going to go with Michael Jackson again?
No. I could. His real name of the character's real name was Leon, but
yeah.
I could continue bashing Michael Jackson, but there was another episode that the character's usage was such a self-aware usage that it just drove me nuts because it didn't seem funny. I'll explain in a second. Who's yours?
I almost have to go with Michael Jackson. The Michael Jackson was because I can't think, you know, again, the lack of embracing the hatred. Yeah, just kind of he was there. He was okay. He sang some songs that were, you know, half-assed Michael Jackson songs.
I think... The one-shot character used on The Simpsons that drove me nuts and I didn't like was, well, technically he was on a second episode, I guess, if you can count the Stonecutter episode, because I think they showed him in there, but it's George Bush, not...
George Bush Senior.
Senior, not Junior. There's the episode where essentially George Bush becomes Homer's neighbor, and basically they turn Bart into this Dennis the Menace-style character that just keeps annoying him. And the thing is that episode never seemed that funny to me because it's one of those things you look at, like, the portrayal of Bush, and it's not like they're portraying Bush. It feels like they were almost, like, making fun of Dana Carvey's portrayal of Bush from Saturday Night Live. It felt like a parody of a parody of a parody.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad episode, I didn't think, you know, and I didn't mind the portrayal that they gave him, but
I'm not sitting there and like stumping for Bush, like Bush is the best president, he needs the they took a real life character, but it wasn't played by that actual character, and they basically it just became this weird, I don't know what they were trying to accomplish.
It was like you said, he was just kind of this weird parody of Bush, but not really. But yeah, and this was back when the whole, you know, Dana Carvey, Phil Hartman, you know, Saturday Night Live type, you know, political commentary thing was just huge and off the charts, which I don't know how we've, with our favorite minor characters, I don't know how we missed good old Lionel Hutz, speaking of Phil Hartman.
I was just going to bring him up, because not just Lionel Hutz, but Troy McClure, and...
Oh, yeah, pretty much
anyone. You have Lionel, what's his name, the monorails...
yeah, I don't remember his
salesman.
Name.
It was Lionel... No, not Lionel. What was it? Stan? Now it's going to drive me nuts. But yeah, Hartman had a tremendous amount of contributions to the early seasons of The Simpsons until his, unfortunately, murder back in 97. So
yeah,
he was there for the first several years or so. And
yeah, Troy McClure and just the whole gang. He did good work.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of a Simpsons retrospect, you know, talking about it is, you know, what was great about it. And I would say that if you've never really, if you're listening to this episode, you're the same age as us, you know what we're talking about, and hopefully it rekindles some of the desire to watch some of those older episodes. And I think you'll, it's going to be weird, because I think the thing that I've noticed, like, years ago when Simpsons used to be on syndication, and I would specifically see what season is it from, and like, all right, that's from one of the more acceptable seasons. I'm not saying there's not clunkers in those first eight years or so. There are clunkers in there. There's some episodes that aren't as funny as you think they would be. And the other problem, too, with syndication, which isn't great, is that syndication, they actually, there's episodes they cut out stuff, too, so they can have more ads. Like, one of the things I hate the most is the syndication cut of Homer's Enemy. And the reason why is because they cut out one valuable scene in that whole episode.
Which one do they cut out?
So there's, it's basically, there's one scene they have in there that I used to love and I used to laugh hysterically, but the B plot of that episode is Bart getting the factory that he bought like an auction for like 10 cents. He gets Milhouse to work there and says, "Hey, you want to be a security guard?" So the whole thing basically is like, well, hey, you need to stay overnight and guard the place. And, you know, Milhouse is reluctant to do so, and Bart gives him like a nickel for like coffee. And he's like, well, this is what it's come to. But at least I'm still doing better than my dad. And it was just a moment I just remembered laughing, because if you know me and my relationship with my dad and everything, yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. They cut that part out, though, of like the whole episode where he becomes the guard. So they immediately go to where like the whole factory's in ruins, and Bart's like, what happened? And, you know.
Yeah.
So, but there'll be those little moments where they cut out some little things here and there in syndication, which was kind of lame, so.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not having watched it the past, you know, however long, I think, you know, I'd try not to bash it too much just because I don't like to bash things I haven't seen, but I think the quality, you know, I think one thing I have noticed is when you see The Simpsons, like, in the headlines for something, it generally tends to be like, hey, they did this great couch gig that's done in the style of Salvador Dali, or that, you know, Guillermo del Toro directed, you know, and so you'll hear news bits about, like, guest stars and about the couch gigs and stuff, but you don't actually hear anything about, like, you know, hey, this episode of The Simpsons was actually great or anything. I mean, I'm sure people, you know, obviously people are enjoying it because they wouldn't be putting it out anymore, but I think it definitely seems to be a little bit more downplayed and underplayed, and, you know, I just haven't had any urgency to go check it out or anything. You know, maybe sometime I'll watch an episode here or there, but I just, yeah, like I said, I don't feel the need to.
It's basically diving back into the pool of water of a pool that has been there for so long, but it doesn't feel like they've cleaned it out. And you
it's
see,
it's kind of like going to like Chuck E. Cheese after you get a little bit too old for it. Like, yeah, I remember this being fun, but you know,
no, even better,
not my thing.
A pool at like a motel that you can tell has just been neglected. Like you sit there, like when you get to the motel, it's like there's a pool there, and like, oh, sweet, a pool. But then you look at the pool that's full of algae. There's like a like a inner tube floating in there. There's a Band-Aids you see floating in there. And, you know, yeah, a dead, like, squirrel is floating in there. That's what it feels like those later episodes are. So that's us discussing The Simpsons. I think we've pretty much covered it all.
And possibly the second or third episode where we mention a dead squirrel.
Right. Dead squirrels. Also, John, watch The Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah. Maybe.
Don't you fucking maybe me. You watch that show.
Realistically, probably not.
I'm going to put it on right now.
Why? I can leave.
No, you can't. You're locked in here. You're not getting anywhere at this point.
Damn it, I knew I should have alluded to that on Facebook earlier this week.
Yeah, well, this place is going to be your grave now, so.
There's an awful lot of plastic out there.
I'm looking for a new co-host. If anybody wants to be the co-host of this show, just let me know and we'll get you on.
You'll last 15 to 20 episodes.
Yeah, if you're lucky. It depends on what you watch, and it took you like forever to get Marvel Unlimited, so.
Yeah. Damn it.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Please listen to future episodes. Share it around.
It was good knowing you all.
Yeah. Say goodbye to John.
Oh.
That's the rock where the leprechaun tells me to burn things. Burn them all, Ralphie. Burn them all.